Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
It's no secret that college sports are riddled with scandal.
Top college basketball coaches took bribes to steer their players.
Coaches at Auburn, Oklahoma State, Arizona, and Southern California.
The NCAA is investigating the Michigan football program.
It's not legal for coaches to scout. This isn't high school on Friday night.
Every season brings headlines about pay-for-play schemes, illegal recruiting, and gambling conspiracies.
There's cheating that goes on. They pay players. They skirt the rules. They operate in a gray area.
Bribes, corruption, a lot of shady dealings.
When you come in and you got a scholarship at The Ohio State University, you don't want to start any problems.
I didn't do nothing, probably because I was scared.
But there's another kind of scandal unfolding behind closed doors. It doesn't make ESPN highlights or spark NCAA investigations. It's the ongoing failure to protect the safety of student athletes. Dr. Scott Lynch knows that reality all too well. As the orthopedic surgeon for Penn State football, he found himself caught between his medical oath and the relentless pressure from coaches to get injured players back on the field.
My job as a physician is to take care of my patient, not to help Penn State win football games. And that's really the bottom line.
I'm Margot Gray. This week on Campus Files, Dr. Scott Lynch breaks his silence and lands at the center of a growing national debate. Who gets to make medical decisions for college athletes? The doctors or the coaches? And what happens when player safety undermines the pursuit of wins and revenue? Dr. Scott Lynch's relationship with athletics goes way back. Long before he ever treated an athlete's injury, he was a competitive athlete himself, a wrestler.
I don't ever remember not wrestling because my dad was the high school coach. So when I was little, I would go in, just mess around. And the high school kids, who seemed very old at that time, would mess around with me and let me do moves on them.
By second grade, he was competing in tournaments, and he never looked back. In high school, he made it to the state finals his sophomore and junior years and won the championship as a senior. Then, at Penn State, he walked onto the wrestling team. But wrestling wasn't the end goal. At the time, his sights were set on electrical engineering.
I was designing microwave communication amplifiers. I worked on some communications for the B-1 bomber. So I really had no aspirations of going to medical school.
But his plans changed during his senior year when he suffered a major injury.
My knee started swelling up on me every day, essentially. And I don't really know when I did it, but I tore my ACL.
Scott's ACL tear couldn't have come at a worse time. It looked like he'd be sidelined for the rest of the season, his final chance to compete. But remarkably, after surgery and exceptional care from his doctors, he made a rapid recovery. With just 2 weeks left to qualify for the state championships, he was cleared to compete. The experience left a lasting impression, not just the comeback, but the doctors who made it possible.
Just, you know, the care for me as a person was really important. That's what I got from all those people that treated me. They understood my goals, but still wanted to protect me. That's really why I went to med school.
In medical school, Scott focused on orthopedic surgery, hoping to treat the kinds of injuries he'd once suffered himself. And in June 1998, he came full circle, returning to Penn State, not as a wrestler, but as an orthopedic surgeon at Hershey Medical Center.
My practice is a subspecialty in sports medicine. So in my career, I think I'm pretty sure I've done over 1,000 ACL reconstructions. And that's anyone from the recreational athlete to just regular workers.
In 2013, Scott got the opportunity to care for top-tier athletes. Penn State offered him the role of head orthopedic consultant for the football team and director of sports medicine. It was a major honor, a recognition of his skill and reputation. His family was especially thrilled, not just because of what the role meant professionally, but because they were lifelong Penn State football fans.
I remember listening to Penn State football on the radio every Saturday.
It'll be second down and 5 for the Nittany Lions.
We'd be out in the garage, my dad would be doing work and listen to the football game.
Touchdown!
Scott eagerly accepted the job. From then on, he split his time between his work at Hershey Medical Center and his new role with the football team.
I would go up into the training room Wednesday or Thursday, depending on time of year, and then come in on game weekend, come in on Friday, have another training room, go to the game Saturday, have an injury check on Sunday, and then back to my regular routine.
Scott's plate was full, and game days brought no relief. While the crowd watched for big plays, he watched for something else, signs of injury. As the team doctor, it was his job to monitor every hit, every limp, every player slow to get up. And the decisions were his, when to pull someone and when to let them keep playing. He still remembers the first time a player had to be carted off the field.
That was at the Meadowlands in New Jersey. We played Syracuse. One of the players tore his ACL. Someone comes in with an ACL tear. It's not hard to figure out what's going on. The harder part is, where do the treatments fit into this patient's life?
In other words, even when an injury is easy to diagnose, treatment isn't always straightforward when it comes to athletes. It's not just about long-term health. There's also the relentless pressure to get players back on the field. Scott knows that calculation firsthand from his experience as a wrestler.
You know, I left the hospital one time and wrestled that night, gauze hanging out the front of my knee. My job is to make sure the player understands the risk-benefit ratio. And in situations that are similar, some people are going to make different decisions. That's okay, but it has to be a decision by the individual.
Meaning the decision should rest with the player, guided by medical advice. It's not a call for the coach or anyone on the coaching staff to make. And for Scott's first year with the football team, that boundary was respected. The head coach stayed out of medical decisions. But in 2014, everything changed. Penn State hired a new football coach, James Franklin. He was coming off a highly successful run at Vanderbilt and was signed to a 6-year, $25.5 million contract.
Franklin had unprecedented success in 3 seasons with the Black and Gold, winning 24 games and leading a program that had reached the postseason just 4 times in its history to 3 consecutive bowl games.
There was a lot of buzz around Franklin's arrival on campus, but Scott was more wary. From the start, there were some concerning warning signs. The first had to do with the Nike contract. Penn State had a multi-million dollar deal with Nike that required players to wear Nike cleats. But to protect players' ankles, the medical staff often taped over the shoes, a practice known as spatting. Nike didn't like that spatting covered their logo, and neither did Coach Franklin, because he was personally profiting from the deal.
He would put pressure on Tim Brame and the athletic sports medicine team to not spat players so he could keep his money, essentially. Doesn't take a genius to figure out that the money is more important than the player's health.
Franklin had made his priorities clear, but Scott was about to learn just how far he'd go and how willing he was to risk player safety. June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples, breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There was tension from the start between Scott and the new head coach, James Franklin. The Nike incident rattled Scott. He couldn't believe a coach would prioritize a brand contract over player safety. It disturbed him enough that he reported it to the school's athletic integrity officer, whose job was to protect medical staff from coaching interference. But the complaint went nowhere, and before long, there was another incident worth reporting.
One of the players had knee injury, and on exam, he had signs that he could have a meniscal tear on the outside of his knee. So I told the player he possibly had a lateral meniscal tear, but it's okay. We can keep treating it and see how things go. If it gets worse or you're not making progress, then we change course and get an MRI and go from there.
Scott was just doing his job, talking a player through his injury and treatment options. It was routine, something that had never caused problems before. But that night, his phone rang, and Coach Franklin was on the line.
Essentially, what happened is Coach yelled at me for telling him you might have a lateral meniscal tear. He didn't want me to say those words because his player got nervous and refused to do his lifting practice. So he wanted me to hide it from the kid. And I said, well, I'm not going to lie to my patient. And he insisted it wasn't lying. But I said, well, maybe not to you, but that's lying to me. And I'm not going to do that.
Suddenly, the call cut off. Coach Franklin had hung up. When Scott called back, he was told the coach was unavailable. Scott says it wasn't the first time, and it wouldn't be the last, that Coach Franklin was angry about a player's injury.
I had one player who's, I didn't know this, but he told me when he was injured, Franklin would come in the training room and just stand at the end of the table and stare at him while he was getting treatment. Wouldn't say a word. But he told me, he said, the implication was clear that he was taking too long to get better.
Scott feared that players were staying quiet about their injuries, afraid to disappoint their coach. So he made it his mission to drill into them that their safety was paramount.
That was one thing I emphasized whenever I talked to players about their treatment, was if anybody's coming to you to try to pressure you into making a decision, it's not good for you. Any of the coaches or anything, make sure you come and tell us. When someone else is trying to influence them, it becomes a lot more difficult. Is the player really making this choice for themselves? Or is the player getting pressure from Franklin or anybody else to do this for the benefit of Franklin and not for the benefit of the player?
Scott says the more time he spent with the team, the more it felt like he was guarding the hen house from the wolves. And nothing made that clearer than when the star running back suffered an ankle injury. Scott asked the head trainer to monitor him during practice, and the report wasn't good. The player wasn't moving well. On game day, Scott assessed the injury himself. The player was clearly limping, so he made the executive decision he'd stay on the sidelines. Not long after, Coach Franklin summoned Scott, the trainer, and the team's primary doctor into his office.
It's a big, long table. He sits at the head, yeah, in a power position. He's a psychology major, and he tries to use those things to put him in a situation to be the person in power. He also brought in a bunch of the other coaches, trying to stack the deck in terms of how many people were on his side to put pressure on us.
Scott says this tactic has become more common in recent years, especially in the wake of the concussion scandals. Coaches now know better than to pressure players directly. Instead, they target the medical staff.
If they can get the medical staff to allow them to play, then they can come back and say, well, it wasn't my decision. This is a medical decision. Even though they're the ones trying to pressure the medical staff in changing the decision. It's to give them cover.
But Scott wasn't one to kowtow to pressure. Not on this occasion or on the many occasions that followed.
I was not doing what they wanted. Not putting players in who weren't ready. Not giving in to them trying to change medical decisions. I felt that they wanted to get rid of me for several years and told my boss that many times they're going to try to get rid of me.
Scott's instincts were right. In February 2019, he was called into his boss's office and was told he was being let go. He had about a month before his replacement would take over. The official reason for his dismissal? His boss claimed it was because he lived out of state and wasn't spending enough time with the football team, something that had never been raised as an issue before. But Scott didn't buy it. He knew the real reason. This was retaliation for refusing to cave to Coach Franklin. And Scott wasn't about to let it slide.
The easiest thing you'll ever do is keep your car serviced with Roda.
That's a real 5-star Google review from Diana S. And honestly, she nailed it. Roda is the DMV's most trusted auto shop. Maintenance, repairs, and detailing with free valet pickup and drop-off. No hidden fees and no pressure. Book in minutes at Roda.com and save 20% with code POD20. It's Roda. Duh.
I hear a lot from people that there are days where it's hard to read a single news story. Forget actually being caught up. But I host a podcast that can fix that. It's called The Seven. 7 stories every weekday by 7 a.m. Eastern. And here's the other thing. It's short, less than 10 minutes, in fact. I'm Hannah Jewell. The 7 podcast will turn around your morning and get you caught up. Check it out and follow The 7 wherever you listen to podcasts.
Scott was out of his job with Penn State football. The job loss stung, but that wasn't what kept him up at night. It was the players.
Because now I was no longer in a position to protect my patients. And they were essentially just throwing the patients to the wolves. So I gave my boss a couple of days later a list of recommendations, put measures in place to mitigate this. At no point did I actually ask to be put back in. It was more to put policies in place to have oversight of the medical care. And he would not go along with it.
Scott's recommendations weren't exactly controversial. They focused on making medical care more independent from coaches and improving how injured athletes are treated overall. But the response he got was disappointing.
Initially, they offered to put me on a committee, essentially with all the people who did the wrong thing. So there would be about 5 of them and 1 of me. How could I make any progress in that situation? It was just to shut me up, essentially. Try to pretend I had some kind of input or voice. And at that point, I realized they weren't interested in making the situation better. They were just interested in making it go away.
Scott's repeated efforts to implement new policies or even get the school to listen went nowhere. So eventually, he made up his mind. The only way to get Penn State and the rest of the world to pay attention was to take the school to court. And that's just what he did. In August 2019, 6 months after his removal, Scott filed a lawsuit alleging wrongful termination and whistleblower retaliation. Here's how Coach Franklin responded.
You know, I think you guys all know yesterday, Penn State Health issued a statement rejecting Dr. Lynch's claims We'll continue to vigorously defend our program and all its participants in this manner. As always, the health and well-being of our student athletes is the utmost importance to us. But after that, we'll have no further comment.
From the outset of the lawsuit, it was clear Penn State had little interest in hearing what Scott had to say or in uncovering what had really happened. For Scott, the deepest betrayal came from someone he trusted implicitly, the integrity officer. For months, Scott had confided in this person, sharing concerns about Coach Franklin and speaking openly about the pressure he was under. But once depositions began, that trust unraveled. The integrity officer claimed that he'd shared Scott's reports with the university's legal team. As a result, those conversations were now shielded by attorney-client privilege, meaning none of the integrity officer's findings could be used in court.
That position was supposed to protect these kids from these types of things from happening. And for them to use that to try to hide things, it's just, I don't even know how to describe it.
Scott says what makes it even more disturbing is the history behind the role. The integrity officer position was created in the wake of the Jerry Sandusky scandal. Sandusky was a longtime assistant football coach at Penn State who was convicted of child sexual abuse. The role of integrity officer was supposed to guarantee that when someone raised concerns about misconduct, the university would listen and act.
I mean, that's pretty sick that they're using that position in the totally opposite way of what it was meant to be.
The integrity officer's betrayal wasn't the only challenge Scott faced from Penn State. The university repeatedly tried to have his case dismissed before it ever reached a courtroom. Many sports reporters and legal analysts predicted it wouldn't make it to trial and that Scott would settle quietly and walk away.
I was never going to settle if they tried to make me shut up. The important thing for me was not getting money. The important thing was to get the information out and try to get something out there to affect change.
In the end, dragged out by delays and legal maneuvering, it took 5 years for Scott's case to go to trial. Finally, the court date was set for May 20th, 2024 in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
My wife was nervous, but even if I lost, I still won because I got to get my information out. That was what was important to me.
Scott may have been calm in the lead up to the trial, but his wife had good reason to be nervous. The jury was made up almost entirely of Penn State football fans. Plus, Penn State had assembled a powerhouse legal team.
I think they had 10 legal people on their side. Just the number of attorneys that they had was just incredible. So in a lot of funny ways, it was the David and Goliath story because, you know, it's me who has not a lot of power against this gigantic institution. And then just visually, I think it helped me as well. I'm 5'6". My attorney's about my size as well. So it's two little guys fighting against the big establishment.
And David and Goliath it was. Over the course of the 7-day trial, Scott's legal team presented a damning case. What emerged wasn't just a story of a coach who had crossed the line, but a portrait of systematic intimidation. Jurors heard, as we did earlier in the episode, that Coach Franklin had ordered Scott to stop taping players' cleats, not for medical reasons, but because the tape covered Nike's logo. They learned the coach had forbidden Scott from explaining injuries to players and had pressured him to rush athletes back onto the field. One witness testified that Franklin had even proposed hanging a sign in the training room that read, "The unmotivated player, the out-of-shape player, the hurt player, and the bad player all look alike." Against this mountain of testimony, the defense had no good answers.
Each time they brought a witness on, I think the jury thought, here's another person not telling the truth. None of their stories matched with the facts of the case or the physical evidence, the emails and all the other things. It was clear that what they were saying was not true.
The trial lasted 7 days. On May 29th, 2024, which happened to be Scott's 63rd birthday, the jury returned its verdict. They awarded a staggering $5.25 million in damages for wrongful termination.
A multi-million dollar verdict handed down in Dauphin County Court ruling in favor of a former
surgeon, Dr. Scott Lynch, was awarded over $5 million.
I think there's no way to read that verdict but a loss for James Franklin.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting.
The verdict far exceeded the expectations of many pundits and even of Scott's own lawyers. Scott believes the $5.25 million award sent a clear message. Medical professionals must be free to prioritize patient health over wins and records. But there's little evidence that message is being heard. At Penn State, Coach Franklin is still under a 10-year, $85 million contract. And across college football more broadly, nothing is changing either. Football players still live with a brutal calculus. Sit out too long, and you might lose your starting position, or worse, your scholarship. Technically, major conference schools aren't allowed to revoke scholarships due to injury. But in practice, coaches often find creative workarounds. Meanwhile, the NCAA, the organization with the power to address the issue, has shown no interest in doing so. Despite repeated outreach from Scott and his attorney, they haven't even acknowledged his lawsuit.
You know, the NCAA not wanting to investigate. That's the story. The money is more important than protecting kids. It's obvious. And they'll come out with some lame statement about nothing's more important to us than the health and welfare of our student athletes. That's their comment every time. Well, show it. Actions speak a lot more than words. Do something. It's been a year, over a year since my verdict. Nobody yet has done anything to change something to protect these players. It's very sad.
Protecting players the way Scott did takes real courage. And in today's system, there's little incentive for doctors to stick their necks out like that.
I don't like disparaging my own colleagues, but a lot of the medical people give in because they get an ego trip being on the sideline. You get marketing ability out of being a doc for the high-profile team, and the pressure is there to give in. You have to be a pretty strong-willed individual to maintain your beliefs and not get swayed by the power and the money that comes with it. And the power and the money keeps getting more and more and more.
Scott thinks the media plays a role too, since most sports reporters have little incentive to cover stories like this.
It's a pretty good job, right? You get to go fly to the games and talk to the players. Many of the publications, like Penn Live, they have two or three reporters that all they do is Penn State football. They don't want to get involved either because it messes up their job.
Scott says it's not like fans are going to push for change either. Most just want to enjoy the game.
They just don't want to think about it because sports is their escape from reality. It's their time to not have to think about their job if they're having a tough time at work or home if they're having a tough time at home. So it's their way to escape from all that and not have to think about the real world for a while. And the sad thing is that this is the real world. They don't want to think about kids getting taken advantage of and hurt because then it messes up their ability to escape from reality.
As a result, Scott is convinced of one thing. Real change has to come from the players themselves. That's why he joined the College Football Players Association, which is pushing to give athletes the power to collectively bargain with schools and conferences.
The NFL, they have a players association, so they have collective bargaining, so they have more protections. They all have agents that can help them. Now, the NFL is not perfect either, but it's much, much better than college situation, especially, you know, some kid from a poor neighborhood without family support. He's got no one looking out for them unless the medical staff sticks up for them. If the medical staff is giving in to the coaches, which happens not that infrequently, that kid has nobody to protect him.
The stakes are nothing short of life and death. Just last summer, during Bucknell's first practice, football player Calvin Dickey collapsed. He'd been showing visible signs of distress during drills, and the coaching staff was aware of a critical detail. Dickey carried sickle cell trait, a condition that dramatically increases the risk of complications during intense physical activity. But Dickey was forced to keep exercising until he collapsed. He ended up in the hospital. And on July 12th, 2 days after his first practice at Bucknell, Calvin Dickey died at 18 years old. Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Margot Gray. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprunkheiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.